welcome to another episode of Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast where we dig into the paranormal and try to find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
I'm Chad.
And I'm Eli.
And this week, we're coming back with some more unsolved mysteries, some missing persons, just these interesting events that happen where people go missing. Some are refound. Some are found. Some are
recycled.
You never know. I don't have a story this week, so this one's going to be all the boys.
Boys are back in town.
I'll just be the commentator. You know, play by play.
Sounds great to me.
All right. Well, let's start out with Eli. And your guy's name is Danny Philippidis.
So in order to keep myself from tongue twisting, I'm just going to say his first name.
Okay. It'll be Danny.
All right. Danny, a 49-year-old Toronto fire department captain, was on an annual ski trip with his colleagues in Lake Placid, New York. After a day of skiing at Whiteface Mountain, Danny told his friends he was going to take one last run and meet them at the bottom. But it soon became apparent that Danny had disappeared. Despite his shoes and clothes remaining in the lodge and his car in the parking lot, unable to contact his cell phone, friends and family reported him missing to the police, instigating a search party to comb the mountain and surrounding area for the next 6 days. After 7,000 man hours of helicopter search and rescue, snowmobiles scouring the mountains, and volunteers digging through snow, Danny turned up in Sacramento, 29,000 miles away and unaware of how he got there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Aside from vague memories of sleeping in a big rig truck, he was still wearing the same ski outfit, including his helmet and goggles, and the time he had purchased a cell phone and got a haircut.
Did he still have his skis with him?
No.
Wouldn't that be a trip if they were like still on his feet? Yeah. Then he's like, really? How did I get here?
He's just like hanging off the back of the big rig with the skis hanging out.
He's like, whoa, those mushrooms are hard, man.
So he basically just kind of blacked out then. Because, I mean, he purchased a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Did he know who he was?
A haircut and a cell phone. I'm not sure if he knew who he was, but it does claim that he was very, even whenever he was found, he was very still out of it. Meaning, like, he was still in a daze of, like, I mean, I guess in order for you to put yourself in his shoes, you'd have to be like, okay, I'm going to blindfold myself for 32 hours. I'm going to walk in one direction and just see where I am and then see how miscombobulated I am.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, the closest thing I have to something like that would be, like, as a kid, you know, you fall asleep on the couch and then you magically wake up in your bed. And there's a little bit of disorientation there. I couldn't imagine being like in a completely different state across the country.
Yeah, 29,000 miles is a really long way.
And it was 3 days?
6 days.
6 days. Okay, so he could have ridden in a car 6 days to get from Lake Placid to Sacramento if it was all day, every day.
The only thing I can think of is maybe, like, on that way down through the slopes or whatever, he might have hit his head or something. Because, like, it doesn't claim that he had any kind of, like, bumps or bruises or anything like that. But, like, if you have head trauma and you walk and you find the closest road and there's a trucker that's not creepy, you know, be like, hey, man, you look lost. You know, you need a ride.
Good luck finding a trucker that isn't creepy.
Hey, man, I got chocolates.
There are creepy truck drivers out there. Yeah. Well, my thought, though, is, well, I guess if it's a truck driver that's driving along, he's not going to stop and catch the news. Like, hey, this guy's missing in this area. You know, by the time he's stopping
the fact
to rest,
that he took him all the way to, you know, would have taken him all the way to Sacramento.
Well,
that's a long drive.
But it doesn't mean that the same truck driver did that. I mean, they could have stopped at a truck stop and then he...
But what does Sacramento have to do with this dude in the first place? Why would he
go to Sacramento?
Yeah,
he didn't have any ties in Sacramento.
I've never been to Sacramento. I don't know.
Fascinating.
So, like, my thing is how did he get off the mountain without anybody seeing him? And he would have had, like, a closed head wound or something.
Yeah.
Where
he whacked his head pretty hard or something like that.
Yeah. Or aliens abducted him and...
See, I was trying to go... as far away from the whole idea of aliens being involved.
It was a Yeti. Amy.
Air elementals.
This, you know what podcast this is? We have to bring aliens or Bigfoot in at some point in time.
Absolutely.
Come on. Now,
it was the New York Yeti who kidnapped him.
Isn't that guy a Knicks fan?
I believe Lake Placid's known for the giant alligator, isn't it?
Yes,
isn't
it is.
Yeah. So,
that's a movie.
Oh, it is? Okay, sorry. Is Lake Placid a state park or is it a national park?
It's a state park.
State park. So, we don't even have like the national park ooky spooky stuff going on there.
No. But I will say this, though. There was a gentleman that later looked into that particular park. And I was going to add this on the back segment of this story because when he went to, I guess, the courthouse to look into some of the disappearances. And specifically, it intrigued him after Danny's disappearance. When he went to look into them, he kept on getting questions like, yes, you're still going to get this information, sir, but why are you interested in it? And it was more so like them trying to figure out what his motivation was behind getting the information because he had no ties to it whatsoever.
Yeah. Well,
that doesn't matter. A Freedom of Information Act, you don't have to give a reason why you want it. So that's peculiar. Yeah.
You don't have to disclose any reason why you want the information.
Oh, yeah.
So
but that's what was interesting about it, though, is because, I mean, he wasn't just looking into Danny's situation. He
sex
was
trafficking.
You think Danny was sex trafficked all the way to Sacramento?
Be like, listen, boys, I'm bringing you a 32-year-old male prime meat.
Very well could be.
He was a fireman. And what do we know about firemen?
They like to ride poles.
They pose in calendars, partially nude.
Some. I'm not going to say all firefighters do.
So he was the fire chief. So
yeah,
maybe he wasn't as scandalously clad.
Yeah, you know, I have seen. There's some firefighters that are definitely a little bit more, and then there's some that are a little bit less. But
then there's firefighters that look like me.
Are you a firefighter?
No. That's just that they look like me. Oh. Meaning out of shape, round, not very attractive. Yeah.
Look at him fishing for compliments.
I know he is.
You're a very attractive man.
Chad, if that's you weren't my brother, I would.
I don't want to hear anything.
If you weren't my brother, I'd hook you up with one of my friends.
Yeah. No, you are my brother, and I've tried to hook you up with some of my friends. And
yeah, I know.
You like stand them up.
Were they mothers?
And ghost them.
Were they mothers?
No.
That's your problem right there.
Didn't ghost her.
My brother Chad here has a thing for moms. So if you're a single mother out there.
And this is all getting edited out.
No, so. I'm leaving this in.
So if you're a single mother.
No.
All you had to do is donate $100 to our Patreon page. Yeah. I mean,
and we'll give you where he lives, his number.
I just take them out on a date. That's part of what we said in the first few episodes.
Okay.
Oh, we still haven't had anybody take us up on that yet.
Oh, shit. Man, you assert.
But our Patreon, patreon.com/UNPNormalcy. Good plug, right? All right. So he's been found.
He's alive.
He's alive. He's healthy.
Yes, he's done interviews.
And he doesn't remember any of it.
He does not remember any of it from point A to point B. All he can remember is a big rig truck. That's it.
It does kind of feel a lot like, what's his face from the movie and then the actual alien abduction? Shoot, what's his name?
Travis Walton.
Travis Walton.
We
yes.
share a brain.
Thank God, because I would have been like, So Travis Walton's case, where he disappeared and is found miles away. Weeks later.
Yeah.
I mean...
With no recollection of it,
yeah.
This is also another situation of Walter White as well. We're going to call this Walter White Syndrome.
Yeah, but Walter White was faking it. So do you think the firefighter
Walter
was faking
White
it?
Walter White Syndrome. Same situation, but he possibly could be faking it.
So you think he could have been faking it?
Maybe. I mean... The problem with it, the
you
whole...
You think he was about to get caught making meth and he decided that he was going to...
No, I think that he... If we want to go into a theory about it, we can go into a theory. And the theory would be maybe he was trying to escape his life. So he left and it was because somebody noticed a photo or a newscast and was like, hey, I've seen that guy. And what better way to go than to Sacramento or 2,900 miles away? Because what's in Sacramento? I mean, there's fucking plane stations everywhere. Or plane stations. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Airports. Sorry. I don't ride those things. They scare me. But there's airports everywhere. And if I was going to flee the state or flee the country and start a new life, I would go to a coastal state, get on a flight, and fly my ass to a different country.
Well, I mean, just going from New York to California is almost like going to a whole other country.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, the odds of getting recognized in Sacramento would be less.
Yes, because if you go to New York, they're going to be checking. I mean, they could pinpoint you anywhere, man.
Like, and if you were going to be leaving the country, I think you would rather go to a smaller airport and leave from the smaller airports.
Yeah.
Than like going to like O'Hare in Chicago or someplace like that, to where they might be more inclined to check.
Oh yeah.
You know, you go to Sacramento.
Has a very small airport.
Take Sacramento, you have a flight to Canada, and then you leave from Canada. Nobody's checking in Canada.
Yeah.
Because you went missing in New York. Nobody's checking in Sacramento because you went missing in New York.
Yeah.
I mean,
that makes sense.
You know, that would make sense. And it does make sense that maybe he got caught and he had to kind of...
Not even fess up to it, just play...
Play dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from him. If it really happened, that's crazy and it's horrible that it happened to him. But I do understand where that could be like a...
It's not the first time it has happened like that. So,
well, like there was that bride that few years back where she... went missing and she claimed to be kidnapped or whatever and trying just to get away and made like this whole big
To a plane station.
Yeah, she went to a plane station.
You know they have female partitions at plane stations.
Yes, those female partitions in those plane stations.
They'll reach out and grab you.
But those bus ports, that's where you really need to go. Yeah,
bus ports or plane stations.
Oh my.
Eli looks like he wants to jump across the table and strangle me.
And boat ports as well. Well, that makes sense, but whatever.
Good try. Good try.
See, whenever I try to seem like I'm really stupid.
You got
to
watch out for those train docks.
Yeah, train docks. There we go.
Train docks.
Because them trains float fast, I tell you what. So that's Danny. Philippidus.
Philippidus
could have been running away from his life, or he could have been abducted by aliens, or he could have got knocked on the head, got on a strange ride with a strange man in a strange big rig all the way to Sacramento, California, and didn't remember a damn thing.
I mean, yeah, he could have, I don't know, how old was he?
34.
So he could have had a psychological break and gone psychotic. He may have had some underlying disorder.
But the big thing here is that he told his friends... that he was going to meet them back at the lodge, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to make a chaos theory about this whole thing, I think the best theory would be that he tried to skip town.
Yeah.
Because that would back it up right there.
He owed Guido some money, and so he had to bounce.
He's like, no, meet me back at the lodge inside where you can't see me on the mountain.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then, I mean, I've never been skiing, but do you actually go skiing by yourself? Or you usually have, like, a ski buddy?
There's usually a ski buddy.
I don't know, because I've never actually
been
skiing.
You can go skiing by yourself.
I mean, you can go by yourself.
Most people go as a group, so you're skiing as a group.
Ski buddy.
So if you die together as a family.
I guess it's like hiking. You know, some people go hiking by themselves, and then some people go hiking.
Which I find to be very stupid, to be honest with you, because... there is strength in numbers, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even against a bear or a mountain lion.
Mountain lion is what I'm most worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's an interesting case. And, yeah, I did see an interview with him. I haven't watched it, but I did see it when I was trying to look up the pronunciation of his last name.
Philippidus.
That's a fun last name.
Philippidus?
Philippidus. There's a lot of duls and bupas in it.
Sounds like a rap name. Yo, it's MC Philippidus coming to you from NYC.
So I was thinking it sounded more like the name of a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Like Serendipitous.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking Lake Placid. There's apparently a lot of missing people from Lake Placid. Mm-hmm. They don't want to give the information out on it. So there could even be some kind of...
Yeah, like...
Something in the water?
Yeah, something in the water.
Or like a gator. That's a horrible movie.
You
though.
Saw the one movie, and you're like, there be gators.
That's the only thing I know about Lake Placid is the movie.
Oh yeah,
and it was a horrible movie.
You know, the only thing I know about the ocean is Deep Blue Sea.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
Not Jaws.
I mean, I'm kidding here. Oh. I'm going with your.
You went with Deep Blue Sea instead of Jaws, or like
because
any other.
Deep Blue Sea was a terrible movie.
I've never seen Jaws. Is a pretty terrible movie too.
The first one was not bad. The second one, yeah.
And I've then never it goes, seen Deep
got
Lucy.
Worse from there.
All right, so now we're going to move on to our next story. Our next story doesn't have the happy ending. Not yet.
Get your tissue, Jerry.
It could. Who knows?
I mean, it's 40 over 40 years old, so.
It could. But this is about young Dennis Martin.
Dennis Martin went out. Father's Day weekend of 1969 with his father, his grandfather, and his older brother to a national park in North Carolina on the border of Tennessee and Carolina. The family is normally from is originally from Knoxville, so it is a place they visit quite often and go camping and just hiking on a daily on a regular basis. Well, the father, grandfather, Dennis, and his brother hiked up the mountain fairways, you know, 20-minute hike maybe, to an area which is an open field. It's a very common place for hikers to stop and have picnics and stuff like that. So they're sitting having a picnic. The two boys are out playing. And these stories, there are a couple different reports here and there. The one I read the most is what I'm going to be explaining. There's also this an author and reporter wrote a book about this. But this new this other family comes up, and they're like, do you mind if our boys play together? And they had a couple young boys as well. And they're like, yeah, sure, that's fine. You know, so they're sitting, the parents are sitting there chatting. Find out that their name is Martin as well. So they're just kind of talking. And then the boys decide they're going to play hide and seek and jump out and scare the parents as they, you know, are walking around. And so the father, Dennis's father, sees him. You know, the boys go one direction to hide behind, you know, bushes and trees and stuff, and he watches Dennis go behind this bush. And then, you know, as they're walking around talking, you know, the boys one by one jump out and try to scare him. You know, poof, ah, and they get to the bush where Dennis went and hid behind, and he doesn't jump out, and they walk around for about 5 minutes, and he's nowhere to be seen. So Dennis's father takes off running about 2 miles down the trail, thinking, you know, there's no way he could got any farther than this, looking everywhere up and down the trail, runs back, tells his grandfather to go get the rangers, the park rangers. It takes it's about 2 hours after Dennis actually disappears before the park rangers actually get there. They start searching. They gather a search party, start walking around looking. It starts raining, so the search gets called off for the night. The next morning they go out. It's kind of a heavy mist, but they continue to search. All the footprints and stuff tend to be washed away from the rain from the night prior. And when Dennis went missing, about an hour after Dennis actually went missing, so an hour before the park rangers show up and everything, there's another family called the Key family. And it kind of, you know, is fitting because they are a major key in this, I believe. But they are walking. It's a decent ways down the trail. I'm along kind of like a little creek bed. The mother, father, I think a daughter and their son. And they're walking and the son goes, hey, look at that. Is that a bear? And they look up and they see what, you know, the child thought was a bear, and they believe to be a man in kind of like a furry jacket kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of hiding in the bushes little ways away. So they kind of just stop and are staring at him, and as he takes off, they notice he's got something flipped, like laying over his shoulder, like kind of like maybe a child, but they couldn't tell what it was, you know, a bag or something, you know, thrown over his shoulder. And he, you know, quickly scurries away. And you know, these people had no idea about Dennis disappearing or anything. So they didn't know what it was. They thought maybe it was just you know, it's another hiker out hiking and, you know, had his backpack or a bag over his shoulder or something. And he wasn't bothering them, so they weren't going to worry about it. And the Key family went home, and the next day on the newspaper, the father saw Dennis had gone missing, and he contacted the park rangers, contacted the police, and said, hey, I mean, it was about an hour after, you know, it was, you know, say 6 p.m., we noticed a man carrying, and they gave him the location where they're at. Then somehow the FBI got involved in the search. They completely dismissed the Keys testimony, saying that where they were at was too far of a walk for someone to be, for Dennis to be carried away, to be that where they were spotted and everything. So they just instantly dismissed it and never looked into it. After another reporter was looking into this and actually went and spoke to Dennis's father, who the FBI said, you know, we'll keep you in touch with everything going on. He had never heard of the Keys testimony. And so him and this park ranger who's been was there day one of searching went, you can get to that spot in an hour. So they went out and hiked that exact area to from where Dennis went missing to where the man was seen. Took them about an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And so they proved that, you know, someone could have gotten there in about an hour. If he was even if he was running or something like that, or sprinting, or you know, jogging or something like that, he definitely could have gotten there. And then the FBI started just doing their own searches and not including Dennis or the park rangers. They were kind of conducting their own searches, their own findings, getting their own findings and everything. And they weren't sharing anything, which started becoming kind of weird. Then the Army Green Berets from a military base fairly close to the region came out in a Huey helicopter, set up their own base of operations with their own communication, refused to communicate with the park rangers or the FBI, did their own research, were there for about a week, and then left. No one knows anything about what they found. There was an interview with another park ranger who had claimed a month prior or so to have been attacked by a wild man who was living in the woods in the park. Just, you know, an old someone living off the land and who
like was a hermit.
Yeah, hermit man. You know, I kind of think of when you think of, I'm going to say West Virginia because that's where I picture, but like the West Virginia mountain men, you know, yeah. They got the fur coats and from the bears they killed and they just live on their own and stuff like that are kind of wild people. He was claimed to have been attacked by one of those. So then the theory came out that, well, was Dennis captured by, was he seen by a wild man and the wild man just took him and ran. And then that would explain why they thought, like, the Key family thought it was a bear maybe because of the furry coat or jacket kind of thing. And then noticed it was a male but couldn't tell what it was. The search went until September. And this was, so he went missing Father's Day weekend. The search continued till September 24th. Of 1969, included over 1,400 people in the search parties over multiple, you know, for months searching. The father didn't leave the area for the first month. He lived in the ranger station for 30 days, refusing to leave until they found his son. Then, and this is where it kind of gets kind of interesting. Now, this part, I've seen things where it wasn't true, and I have seen a lot of reports of it being true. And a reporter that wrote this book did a bunch of research into it. The head FBI agent on this case committed suicide about a couple years later after multiple cases of people missing in this national park that he was in charge of looking. He'd been in charge of about, I think, 7 to 9 cases of people missing from this park. Never found who did it, and then he committed suicide. None of his findings or anything were ever distributed. Dennis's father believes that it might be whatever he found just messed with him too much.
Yeah.
If he's covering these things up and he's seen all these different families that are aching from the loss of their... Because most of the time in national parks, it's young people and children. So these young kids that their parents are missing them and over having to lie to these parents... That could eat at somebody, too.
Yeah.
Or did the disappearances of people stop after he killed himself?
No, those disappearances still happen.
Yeah, they're still happening in the area. But, and that story was told to this reporter and the author of this book by Dennis's father, and he had talked to another FBI agent who concluded that that is what happened. He did commit suicide and everything. And, I mean, to this day, Dennis is still missing. Dennis's father, after a couple decades of searching, made a deal with his wife that they were going to, that, you know, Dennis is gone, they're going to quit searching because it ruined Dennis's father's life. He gave up everything he had and searched for his son. Missed, you know, decades of time with his other son in search of Dennis. So they made this deal with his wife that they were just going to, you know, Dennis is gone, we're going to try to move on. And it took this reporter, I can't think of his name right now, he's the author of this book and everything. It took him a decent amount of time talking Dennis's father into even talking to him. And all he asked was, tell me things that no one knew. And you know about this case.
This is the missing 411 guy.
Yeah, the same author who wrote the missing 411. He also wrote an entire book just about this missing, about Dennis.
Because I've heard this story. David Politis.
Yeah, David Politis, yes.
Okay, yeah. I want to get the missing 411 series so bad.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I listened to an interview with him. He was doing like a radio show or a podcast, mm-hmm. or something like that. And he's telling this whole story about it. And it just is an eerie feeling. I mean, there's the ideas that, you know, Dennis fell in a hole. So, you know, kids run around. He fell into a hole or something and got hurt and, you know, died later on due to the weather and, you know, exposure. There's other reports, you know, he just got lost and were attacked by a bear or a wild boar or something like that. But it just blows my mind that the FBI got involved as quickly as they did.
Yeah.
Two, that an Army Green Berets unit was sent out. But the fact that they didn't work with the other search parties, yeah. They conducted everything their own, didn't have any communication with anybody.
The FBI, I can kind of understand, because if it's a national park, then it could possibly be considered their territory. And does the park, is it between North Carolina and Tennessee?
Yeah, it's on
the
border.
So does it go in between? So is the park in both states? Because if it crosses states, then that would also bring
in
the FBI.
But you think they would at least communicate with the park rangers and stuff who are in charge of that area?
You would think, but...
I mean, it is the FBI, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's government. You never know what they do.
It's just kind of interesting. Like I said, to this day... I mean, Dennis would be, he was 6 years old in 1969, so he'd be almost 50 years old right now.
Calculator.
It's 2019.
Yeah.
So it's going to be 50 years. So he'd be 56?
Yeah. Yeah.
56.
So, I mean, if he's alive, he's a grown man. There's another conspiracy theory I heard that the Martin family that showed up kidnapped him. It happened to be so that their names were the same last names and everything. So if Dennis tried to say anything, they could be like, oh, no, see, we're the Martins. He's just...
Yeah.
He likes to play these games and stuff like that. And something like that would kind of be... That seems a little far-fetched, but at the same time...
You would think if the FBI was involved, they would be watching that family pretty closely anyway. Yeah.
But there are from all the research I did and from listening to... David Pilatus, is that FBI had no leads on if he was, like, kidnapped or anything like that. They didn't have any suspects, or at least they didn't release any suspects.
The only lead they had was the keys, and they didn't follow it.
They didn't believe the
keys. Or they did follow it, and they found out, and they're like, all right, we can't discuss this.
Yeah.
Because there's one thing with missing people in national parks. This is a huge thing that's been happening. And David Politis has the Missing 411 series, and it's all about people who go missing from national parks. And it's broken up into a series based off of regions, because there are so many of them that he couldn't write just one book. So, like, there's the Northeast, the Southeast, the Northwest, the Southwest, you know. There's actually...
Oh, yeah, there's tens of thousands of them over the past 50 years.
There's actually very few in the central part of the country.
Yeah.
It tends to be the coasts that have, like, the more missing persons cases. The United States and Canada tend to be the biggest areas.
My biggest belief on this is he was... I honestly believe in the wild man theory.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, there was, I mean, a park ranger who was in the hospital due to an attack by a wild man. So it makes sense to me that if Dennis was far enough away and kind of maybe downhill a little bit or something like that, that the wild man could have just grabbed him. And the Key family, I forgot to say this, before they saw this man, they heard a loud
scream.
Scream.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be possible that this, you know, wild man grabbed Dennis, you know, covered his mouth, took off running down the hill or down the mountain, and then, you know, at one point, Dennis kind of wiggles free enough to scream. The Key family hear him and see him, but they can't tell. He's far enough away they can't see what this person is. And then who knows what he, I mean, he became food for the wild man, got raised by the wild man, he's a wild man himself now. Who knows?
The creepiest thing about this, I feel like, is whether it be the wild man or we go into like aliens or Bigfoot or whatever, is the fact that there was somebody there watching them and they had no clue.
Yeah.
Because something took him. And whether they lured him away or it just snatched him and took off.
Yeah.
There was something there that the family didn't see. And it sounds to me like the dad had a pretty close eye on Dennis.
He saw him and he said within 2 minutes he was gone. So he watched him walk behind the tree. You know, some of the kids jump out and he's like, oh, you scared me. Turns around to go find Dennis behind this bush and he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
See, my immediate thing is, like, whenever you brought up the whole wild man aspect of the story, and this is a little on the darker side, so apologies, but if you're a wild man, or let's just call you a hobo, okay, but you've lived off the land your entire life, you've hunted, you do everything naturally, basically, what would not constitute you abducting a child for the matter of food?
He could have taken him for food, could have taken him for now physical activities. Could have taken him because he's lonely.
Oh, yeah, everybody needs a workout, buddy.
Exactly.
You go to the gym and, you know, do CrossFit.
So, I mean,
the only thing that throws me off about the story, though, is that Key's hearing a scream. If, and I'm not saying, this is not a hypothetical, I mean, this is a hypothetical situation. If you're going to kidnap a child that was so close to the perimeter of his parents or mm-hmm. people, you would try and shut that child.
So you knocked him out. The scream was heard an hour later.
Okay. Yeah.
So if he knocked him out and Dennis came to, you know, an hour down the trail.
Yeah.
And then screamed, and then, you know, the wild man just hit him over the head, and that's why he was kind of hiding in the bushes and the trees. You know, hit him, knocked him out again, and then took off running, and that's when the Key family saw him. But that's the theory I really believe. CSI, but this is one of those just a sad story because it's just a young boy.
With its location, what popped into my head was Casey Hathaway from the Last Missing Persons when he said that a bear took care of him.
Yeah.
And it's in the same state. It's kind of...
It is.
Kind of similar there.
But this is just one of those sad stories. Like I said, Dennis's parents just, you know, believe he's gone. So if anyone has any information on Dennis's whereabouts or anything that might, you know, give closure to this family, you know, let the authorities know. If you guys have any other information that I might have missed on Dennis, let us know.
Yeah.
We can always put it in another episode and, you know, add that stuff to it.
I've heard a lot on this case, and I've listened to probably some of the same interviews with David Politis. David Politis on it. I'm the missing 401 really intrigues me, and all the state park missing persons. A lot of them are really hard for me to listen to because a lot of them have kids,
yeah.
And that's really hard for me, especially when they're around the same ages as my kids. It's just like, oh my gosh, what would I do? You know,
I mean, this is the craziest thing about this is it's one of those. It wasn't you know, one of those cases of, you know, the father just ignoring his child.
Yeah,
and the child gets lost or something like that. I mean, he kept a close eye on his son, and I mean, took his eyes off of him for 2 minutes, and that's all it took for his son to disappear out of his life for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So I know this is kind of a dark missing persons they go off with. So, Dave, I think you have a little more lighthearted one to end on.
Yeah, I have what I've been calling the curious case of Benjamin Kyle. On the 31st of August, 2004, just before dawn at 5 a.m., an employee was taking the garbage out of a Burger King located in Richmond Hill, Georgia. He saw a naked, sunburned man with fire ants crawling across his body laying behind the dumpster.
Ow.
He immediately phoned the police. When the police arrived, the man was awake but confused. He also had a rash across his skin. The report indicated that a vagrant had been found sleeping and an ambulance took him to St. Joseph's Hospital. He was admitted under the name of Burger King Doe because the hospital already had a John Doe. Burger King Doe had no injuries. He appeared to be a white male in his mid-50s. His blood tested negative for drugs and alcohol. His vital signs were very good. He also had cataracts and three small depressions on his skull. Doe refused to speak or eat. He kept his eyes shut. When a doctor touched his chest, he thrashed around. Doe started becoming more responsive and told a nurse he had lived in the woods for 17 years. He couldn't remember his real name. On the eighth day, he started calling the nurses beasts and demons. He would swing and spit at them if they got too close. Doctors diagnosed him with catatonic schizophrenia. Doe was transferred to the psychological ward at a hospital across town. He claimed not to remember his name, how he arrived in Georgia. He suspected he was from Indianapolis, had two or three brothers, but could not remember them. He vaguely remembered the inside of an old movie theater, some city streets in Denver. The only thing he was absolutely certain of was his birthday, August 29th, 1948, because it was exactly 10 years earlier than Michael Jackson's birthday. So the doctor shortly realized it was not schizophrenia because he was too lucid and was aware of current world events, such as the second invasion of Iraq just a few months earlier. The only thing that was hazy was his own history. They concluded it was dissociative amnesia. In January 2005, 4 months after discovery, Doe was transferred to the J.C. Lewis Primary Care Center, a homeless shelter in downtown Savannah. He thought his real name might be Benjamin, and he chose the last name Kyle, since people had been calling him BK for the last several months. He was described as a people pleaser, avid reader, and despite only being able to see a few feet away, he started doing chores and odd jobs at the shelter. So he was a very high-functioning resident. 9 months after he was discovered, he received a cataract surgery paid for by the Knights Templar in Chicago. Benjamin was surprised upon seeing his reflection at how old he was. He thought he was only in his 30s. Over the next couple years, he became an essential part of the shelter. He could be best described as a live-in, unpaid staff member. 2 years after Kyle arrived at the shelter, he made friends with Catherine Slater, a middle-aged nurse that started working the night shifts. Slater decided to help Benjamin figure out who he was because she felt his character was of someone who would be missed. So Benjamin Kyle was in a very interesting position. He had no identity, so he couldn't apply for a job. He didn't have a Social Security number, so he couldn't even receive government assistance. The Social Security office was unwilling to issue him a new number because it was clear he already had one. Catherine Slater started combing through missing persons' website, posting his picture on message boards on the internet. Assuming he had probably been mugged and stripped at the Burger King, she contacted the Richmond Hills Police Department and was surprised to find out they never opened a criminal case. You know, think about this. What if someone had mugged him, pulled the money out of his wallet, and then tossed the wallet containing his ID, library cards, maybe a Social Security card right in that dumpster?
Yeah, and they never checked it.
Yeah, I never even bothered to look in there.
His identity could be at the dump.
Mm-hmm. There was an FBI agent named Bill Kirkconnell that agreed to take fingerprints from Kyle and feed them into the FBI's national database. The FBI fingerprint database is the largest in the world, containing more than 113 million sets of prints. But since Benjamin was, one, not a criminal or a government employee, they did not have his prints on file. He did place Kyle on the missing persons list, and he was the only person ever placed on it with the location being known. Kirkconnell also reached out to Interpol and Canada authorities. He even went as far as asking the U.S. Marshals Service on the off chance that Benjamin was in the witness protection program. But nothing turned up. In June 2007, Slater offered Benjamin Kyle a room at her house. Also in 2007, Slater reached out to the media to get Benjamin's picture and story out there. In September, Kyle was featured in the Savannah Morning News as a, quote, real live nobody. Media outlets from all over the U.S. began calling for interviews. CNN, Fox News, ABC, NBC, CBS, etc. Kyle was dubbed Nowhere Man and the Living John Doe. With each story, more tips poured in, but they all led nowhere. In 2008, Benjamin appeared on the Dr. Phil show. Lacking legal identification, Kyle had to board the plane with a police officer and had to be handed over to Homeland Security. The Dr. Phil show was the largest viewing audience his story had been shown to. During all these interviews, some memories he stated he had or were retrieved through hypnotic regression therapy were being born 10 years before Michael Jackson and on the same day, August 29th, 1948. Hypnosis suggested that Kyle had two or three brothers. Kyle had memories of Indianapolis as a child, including the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, the Woolsworth on the Circle, and the India Theater showing movies in Cinerama. He also remembered grilled cheese sandwiches for a quarter and glasses of milk for a nickel at the Indiana State Fair. So these memories placed him in Indianapolis between at least 1954 and 1963. He felt like he was raised Catholic. Kyle also had memories of being in the Denver metropolitan area. He had very detailed memories of the subscription of the University of Colorado Boulder's Norland Library had to restaurants and institutions. He also remembered the round-the-corner restaurant on the hill and the Flatirons and the Fox Theater near the Boulder campus. He remembered a restaurant named Azar's in Boulder that had terrible food and service. So this placed Kyle in Colorado in the late 1970s to early 1980s. Kyle reported having memories of the controversy surrounding the construction of mass transit in Denver when the city had no financing to proceed. The project was later completed in 1994. He remembered he arrived in Denver during the construction of Pearl Street Mall in the downtown area, and shortly after the big Thompson Canyon flood that occurred on July 31st to August 1st of 1976. He knew he loved science fiction. He felt he had a mustache most of his life and probably smoked, and that he hated physical contact. Tips and leads poured in even faster, but this only led to several false leads and dead ends. This did, however, lead to Benjamin meeting Colleen Fitzpatrick, a genealogist who started working on his case in February of 2009. Kyle took several DNA tests, and they were transmitted to private DNA databases. So like Ancestry Database, 23andMe, stuff like that. The test revealed that Kyle shared a significant amount of DNA with a family named Powell. He appeared to have a different number of particularly close genetic matches in the Western Carolinas, particularly in Transylvania and Pickens counties. Fitzpatrick traveled to these places, took out ads, placing his picture in small-town newspapers, and began to contact other pals and collect their DNA. After more than a year of work and hundreds of hours of donated time, she finally felt that she was on the verge of a breakthrough. Then Benjamin Kyle just stopped talking to her. So she stopped investigating. Later on, he would claim she wasn't sharing the information she was finding with him, but we'll get back to that later. When Benjamin had moved in with Slater as a roommate years back in 2007, it quickly became apparent that he was a hoarder. He would come back from the dump with file cabinets, catalogs, broken tools. Benjamin started making repairs on the house and soon had projects in every room. He refused donations that she had set up for him. She even slept on the couch for 18 months after he tore up her bedroom floor.
What a great house guest.
Right? In February 2001, things had gotten very tense in the house. She felt like he was creating problems just to fix them. And he seemed uninterested in finding out who he was before 2004 anymore. She found a shelter in Savannah, where they understood Benjamin's situation. She offered to drop him off there. He refused the shelter and the ride from her. He grabbed a backpack and just started walking to Florida. After a few miles, two sheriff's deputies that recognized him stopped and offered him a ride to the border. When he got to Jacksonville, Kyle tried to enter a homeless shelter but was turned away, lacking identification. So he slept in a field behind the sheriff's office. Benjamin reached out to John Wickstrom, a 24-year-old film student at FSU who had contacted him previously about making a documentary. During the making of the documentary, John Wickstrom helped Kyle set up a website and a Facebook page. He also arranged for Kyle to appear on two Ask Me Anything interviews on Reddit, which received enough upvotes to land on the site's front page. It's actually still on Reddit. You can go to it and read it. It's really interesting. A local news station ran an article on Benjamin Kyle. John Schrute, the owner of the restaurant Crazy Fish, saw the report and offered him a job washing dishes. Kyle discovered he had extensive knowledge of restaurant equipment, how to work the grill, calibrate the deep fryer, store the pans, clean the equipment. He even took apart and fixed one of the commercial stoves. He quickly became Schrute's best employee. Wickstrom's short film about Benjamin Kyle focuses on the struggle to survive without an identity. It was screened at the Tribeca Film Festival and at Cannes Film Festival. You can actually watch this on YouTube. After the film came out, Wickstrom started an online petition to get Kyle a new Social Security card. It needed 25,000 signatures to receive a response from the White House. It ended up getting less than half. Benjamin Kyle was able to receive an ID through the state of Florida, though, with the help of a senator. In February 2015, Colleen Fitzpatrick told a TV station in Atlanta, "If the mystery is ever solved, I think the story will go away, and he won't get the time and attention from people. And he'll probably have some angry people that devoted a lot of effort to helping him when in the end, he's not a big executive. He's just a regular person, or probably just a street person." Kyle posted on his Facebook a response, saying he stopped talking to Fitzpatrick because she not only denied him access to his own genealogical data, but she also refused to share information with other researchers. Fitzpatrick denied the accusation, and they had a back and forth in the comments section. Good old Facebook fight, right?
Those are fun.
But this conversation, this fight, attracted the attention of C.C. Moore, a genealogist who had been a colleague of Fitzpatrick. Moore contacted Benjamin Kyle, and she resumed the case. Moore and her team spent almost 2 years on the case. Then sometime during this two-year period, there was another Facebook fight. This time between Fitzpatrick and Moore. Fitzpatrick accused Moore of stealing her case. Quote, or I guess not a quote, but this is what she posted. So I guess it is a quote, isn't it? She's not comfortable with her own accomplishments, so she has to steal mine.
Oh, wow.
And they had a back and forth. This conversation attracted the attention of a person that was literally on their way to a PAL family reunion where distant cousins would be present. They reached out to Moore and agreed to get DNA samples of anyone that was willing. Most of the PAL family was Protestant, but one family of PALs was Catholic. And Benjamin thought, if we remember, he might have been raised Catholic. So on September 16th, 2015, Moore and the team had discovered who Benjamin Kyle was. William Burgess Powell, born on August 29th, 1948, the exact day a decade before Michael Jackson was born. He also had two living brothers. He was the son of Furman Powell Sr., a flight engineer in the Second World War. His mother worked as a photographer for the Navy Air Corps. They met in Boise, Ohio, but then they moved to Lafayette before having children. Lafayette is only about 60 miles from Indianapolis, which Benjamin remembered as a child. But the household had been frightening. Marjorie had a hoarding problem. Furman Sr. brutally abused William. When William was 16, he left the home and lived with another family across town. For several years, he did odd jobs, including being a handyman at the theater. So if you also remember, he didn't like to be touched at all. So that could
come from the abuse from his father.
Absolutely. So Pal ate dinner with this family every night and would spend his free time reading and listening to music. The little mobile home he lived in was in the process of a remodel he never got around to finishing, whereupon he was raising the ceiling on it. Then in 1976, he missed dinner. They went to his trailer and he was gone, with almost everything left behind. His car, a 1966 Rambler station wagon, was found abandoned a couple days later near the Oakdale Dam. Furman Jr. Williams' brother filed a missing persons report with state police. The police quickly located Powell. He was living in Boulder, Colorado, working as a cook at Azar's restaurant, the one he remembered as having terrible food and service. This discovery took him off of the missing persons list, which was why he was never found on it. Furman Jr. wrote to William, but never got a response. Later on, he asked a friend in the Army Intelligence to perform a background check on his brother, but nothing came up. No address, no mortgages, no phone numbers. His brother knew he was a smoker most of his life, so he just assumed he was dead. So according to earning records filed with the Social Security Administration, William Powell worked at several restaurants in Denver from 1978 to 1983. But where he was from 1984 to 2004, when he was found behind the dumpster at the Burger King in Georgia, is still a mystery to this day.
He was living in the woods, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, very plausible.
Some part of me, though, feels like it's a bunch of bullshit. I don't know. He could have chosen to be just homeless and...
Yeah. So it very well could have been in 1984, he got fired, couldn't get another job, lived off the streets, maybe did some drugs.
Yeah.
Got himself, washed up and got, something happened, and then he finds his way back to Georgia and, drug the ODs or something like that and just kind of erases it. Scrambles his brain, so
yeah. Well, I mean,
they didn't find any drugs in his system when they did the
who knows when he did the drugs and it scrambled his brain, that could have been done in the 90s and then been clean, but his brain's been scrambled, so he's been living in the woods.
He's got like 24 years or 20 years missing,
yeah,
yeah.
So he very well could have just totally screwed up his head with drugs and alcohol. And to the point that he didn't remember things. Yeah. I mean, look.
He also had, you said, three indentions on his skull or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, he had three depressions on his skull.
So he could have hit his head while he was...
could have been got in a fight or something like that and just managed to survive for 20 years and then...
Although the naked and sunburned thing. That's odd to me. Because nobody reported a naked man before he was found in the alley?
I guess not.
Because it's going to take some time to get completely sunburned.
Wasn't he covered in fire ants?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was found before the sun even came up. So, I mean, he'd been there since at least the day before when the sun was shining.
Yeah. I don't know, that one's interesting. There's a lot of, I mean, 20 years of missing time, pretty much.
See, I think kind of like what he was doing before he went missing, where he was living with that family, and he was creating problems just to solve them.
Yeah.
I think that's really where he'd been that past 20 years, was just doing that. Latching onto somebody who wanted to help him.
Yeah.
And like with Slater, as soon as they were like, you know what, I can't deal with this anymore, and they'd just send him on his way and just quit caring about him.
And then he
would just, next person that... Because that's exactly what happened with her, and then he attached on to Wickstrom.
Yeah.
And kind of did the same thing with him, and then...
Just kind of mooched and moved on and mooched and moved on and mooched.
Yeah.
And he could have used a completely different name.
So he wasn't an astral hobo, he was just an actual hobo.
He was just an actual hobo.
Yeah.
Not astral, actual.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's one of those things, though. It's... That's a lot of time to not remember.
But does he not remember it, or does he just not mention that he remembers it? Because maybe he did some stuff he shouldn't have been doing. Maybe there are people who were after him.
Well, then why would he go on national TV and put his face out there? You know, that's it's. I mean, I've thought about this a lot.
I feel like he had to have either injured his head somehow, or due to drugs or alcohol somehow. Something messed with his head enough to where he didn't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then who knows what happened from then. But yeah, that's an insane story.
But I mean, he doesn't have any problems with his memory after 2004. So it's just something he just snapped out of one day. It's peculiar. Peculiar stuff.
Yeah.
Which again leads me to the faking it.
Yeah.
Maybe he's trying to avoid child support somewhere, so he's...
But then why would he be submitting his DNA to... I mean, it's just one of those things.
That off.
You start... Anytime you throw something at it, it's...
But why would he do this?
Yeah.
He could just be an opportunist.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah,
very much. He lives his life getting everybody to do things for him, and, you know... He probably was on a low point in life and came up with this idea of maybe even, I know he wasn't expecting to be put, you know, on TV and stuff, but like, well, if I do this, you know, I'll go to the hospital, you know, and see, I might get put in a shelter or something like that, and just a ways, you know, freeload off of stuff. And then once the opportunity arose for him to start these interviews and stuff like that, he just rolled with it and kept it going, even though he might have got his memory, he might have had memories,
I do find it odd, though, if he was an opportunist, why he wasn't taking the donations. Because you would think that if that was what he was, he would be taking those donations and using that.
Yeah, because they would set up, like, GoFundMes and stuff, and he'd always refuse the money.
Yeah, I totally see what you're talking about. Well, you get this idea, and you're like, well, no, because why would he do this?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, even living in the woods, he had cataracts when he was found. He couldn't see more than a couple feet from his face, so how would he be surviving in the woods?
Yeah.
Maybe he thought he was living in the woods, and really he was living in, like, just a park somewhere.
Yeah, could be.
Sleeping on benches. I don't know. I don't know how other towns handle their homeless. Ours doesn't, so.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I don't know how they do that.
But at the same time, I mean, if like, any of the homeless people we see around town, if we all of a sudden see them on the news or the Dr. Phil show or something, we're like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
To not know him.
Yeah,
or,
we do know our homeless, like,
because we see him or walking around town, and we even make up names for him, like the hat guy and
Mr. Chin.
Yeah,
Chang.
Mr. Chin.
Yeah, I know him.
That's his actual name. That's not.
Well, I mean, he's got a bunch of made up names.
He does
too.
Have a lot of made up names. Yeah. But yeah, that's his. Actual
I did try
name.
To buy that guy's drink one time about 4 years ago, and he was like, "No. He doesn't accept handouts."
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I ate lunch with him one day in high school because he used to hang out around Norman High a lot, and he was at CC's, and me and my friends just asked if we could sit down with him and talk to him, and he told us, you know, why he's doing what he's doing, and so. I mean, he was a really nice guy. He just has some mental issues. He was a really nice guy.
Like, we have the guy that hangs out where we work. Well, he doesn't hang out there anymore now that we have the lights on him. But he used to just sit and he'd pace back and forth in the alley.
Yeah.
And
just waiting for a victim.
He was strung out on something. I mean, he got arrested for huffing gas across the street.
Yeah.
I mean, so he was always high. I called the cops on him for he was passed out on our dumpster.
You can get arrested for that?
No, I thought he was dead.
The cops and they just escorted him to across the street.
They just escorted him to the dumpster across the street. I mean, he's just always strung out. So I bet you he doesn't remember. Like, if he cleaned up, he probably wouldn't remember what's happened the last few years.
Yeah.
Because he's just constantly strung out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know much about gas huffing. Listeners, if any of y'all know.
But that paint stuff, we gotcha. Well, I'm kidding.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he does meth by what, because I've watched him on the security cameras.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he does meth by some of the ways that he acts. Like, he sits there and just, like, I don't know, paranoid and talking to people that aren't there.
Does this
like
dude also have like a large knot on his head?
No, not
that guy.
That is another one of our Norman.
Yeah, he comes into the shop all the time. But no,
But yeah, I mean case in point.
Yeah.
You're gonna
we know the majority of the homeless.
Yeah, well it's like the guy that died at the hospital. The cops wouldn't
admit him because they thought he was just faking it, went to play because it was cold, it was during the winter.
Yeah.
And they thought he was just trying to get in, then he died in police custody an hour later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's but, sad.
I mean, a lot of people knew him.
Yeah.
You know, so the homeless in the areas, yeah, are pretty recognized. But if you get into the bigger cities, I don't know if that's the same case. I mean
for instance, yeah. Like, Norm's pretty small. I mean,
yeah.
Compared to, like, big cities. So.
And, I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean he was homeless around Richmond Hill, Georgia. He could have been just traveling homeless, you know?
Yeah, he could have.
Drifting.
He could have hopped on a semi and driven from Sacramento.
Ridden, not driven.
Ridden, yeah.
Also could have
been
rode down there to Sacramento.
You know, that we talked about in the Bigfoot episode where, you know, Grognostics thought the hobos, you know, just rode trains. And
yeah.
Could have been one of those.
Speaking of, I don't know if I said this, but I actually had to text or message on Twitter the Grognostics guys. I was coming home from work one day, literally saw a homeless man walking down the street with a stick and a Walmart bag tied to the end of the stick walking down the road.
With a pendle?
I was like, I texted them, I was like, see, they do exist. They just have upgraded to Walmart sacks now.
We need to attempt to do another special with them. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was.
So. Yes.
Yeah, we got to test out Oklahoma cocaine versus
California cocaine.
Y'all can do that. I'm not going to. We get our marijuana licenses. We can test Cali marijuana versus Okie marijuana.
Oh, crap. Yeah. I feel really relaxed. But with this one, I'm just like, oranges. They're everywhere.
So, Grogs, you guys, come up with the next topic. If there's any other podcasts out there that want to team up for an episode,
dip their finger into paranormal scene, you can contact us.
Yes, on any of the on any of the social medias at UNP Normalcy.
If any one of our listeners wants to come on and tell one of your spooky stories,
yeah, we're gonna be gearing up. We're gonna be gearing up for another listener story episode. So, get those stories submitted, you can submit them to unpnormalcy@gmail.com or message us on the or message us on the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
That's how I started. I started with a personal story.
Yes.
And you
know, I don't think anybody uses Twitter anymore.
Our Twitter has 12 followers.
Yeah.
lots of people use Twitter.
Is growing and growing.
Nobody uses Twitter to follow us, but lots of people use Twitter. But I think it's because I think our president kind of forces people to not tweet.
People look at people look at Twitter for a place just to see
drama,
funny things and stuff like that. And
gotcha.
Just like
I literally use it just to follow sports teams.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So
I now follow our podcast.
I follow a bunch of podcasts.
And I follow OU, and I follow Lincoln Riley.
Okay, Scooby-Doo. Ruh-roh.
I think that's it.
I don't even have a Twitter, okay? I have an Instagram and a Facebook, but I don't have a...
I made a Twitter literally just to follow our podcast, and then I was like, I kept getting these things like, hey... This
Check
is from
this
OU football
out.
And
check
all this stuff.
Out.
I'm like, all right, I'll follow OU football. I like OU football. But then I don't check it. Basically, it'll pop up and say, you have 20 new things. And it's like,
they'll give you suggestions.
And I do follow the last podcast people. I do follow them on there.
At least I follow podcasts and groups like that. And then that's all I use Facebook.
But then they just are posting on Twitter the same stuff that they posted on Instagram and Facebook. So I don't ever check the Twitter because it's on my Instagram that I'm
but
always checking.
But if you are, if you do use Twitter... Come follow us there. We'll post them pretty often.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it. Check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/UNPNormalcy. And until next time.
Keep digging.